This is tape recording number 5405CO3, entitled SOP-8D, Viewpoint Straight Wire. A lecture by L. Ron Hubbard given to the students on the 5th American Advanced Clinical Course on the 3rd of May, 1954. Copyright 1954 by L. Ron Hubbard. All world performance rights reserved. This lecture is 58 minutes long. Reproduced by the Audio Production Division of Golden Era Studios.
And this is a lecture on viewpoint straight wire, a process which is very simple, very easy to use, and has continuous advances. This process is not mixed with other processes. It's not part of any standard operating procedure. It's not part of anything that you would do ordinarily. Doesn't particularly apply to one case level or another case level. It is an independent process, which in itself is very simple to administer. It can be, I suppose, self-audited, but I wouldn't advise it offhand. The formula of this process is all those definitions and axioms, arrangements and scales of Scientology should be used in such a way as to bring about a greater tolerance of such viewpoints on the part of the preclear. It's a formula. That means that any scale there is, any arrangement of fundamentals in thinkingness, beingness, could be so given in a straight wire that it would bring about a higher state of tolerance on the part of the preclear. Make this more intelligible. You should understand what a great many preclears are doing and why an auditor occasionally has trouble with one preclear more than another preclear. A great many preclears are being processed solely and entirely because they are unable to bring themselves to tolerate an enormous number of viewpoints. And being unable to tolerate these viewpoints, they desire processing so that they can fall away from them and not have to observe them. And the auditor is auditing somebody who is in full retreat, and Scientology is being used to aid and abet the retreat. By taking the charge off of an engram, the auditor at once gives the preclear something in the way of a change of viewpoint, in that he erases something so the preclear doesn't have to view it anymore. Well, as you can see, this is a weak direction. He erases something so the preclear doesn't have to view it. In other words, what the auditor is doing is, to some degree, holding in question the ability of the preclear to tolerate viewpoints. Time itself may very well be caused by an intolerance of past viewpoints. A person doesn't want viewpoints in the past, and so at a uniform rate, he abandons past viewpoints. And when he no longer is following this uniform rate, but is abandoning them faster than the uniform rate, he starts to jam in terms of time and becomes obsessed about time, becomes very hectic, begins to rush time, push hard against the events of the day. He feels that he doesn't have enough time to accomplish everything he's supposed to accomplish. And this falls off on a very rapid curve to a point where an individual will simply sit around idle fully cognizant of the fact that he doesn't have enough time to do anything, and so doesn't do anything, but knows he should be doing something, but can't do anything because he doesn't have enough time. This is idiocy itself, but is the state in which you find a great many freaklers. Time is a single arbitrary which entered into life, is well worth investigating on the part of an auditor. Now, an unwillingness to tolerate viewpoints will cause a jam in time. The fewer viewpoints which an individual will tolerate, the greater his occlusion and the worse his general state of beingness is. As I said, an auditor can remedy this in various ways. He can erase locks and engrams, and by erasing them, make it possible for the individual to tolerate the view he finds in his own bank. Or an individual can be so processed as in exteriorization that he can be caused to go around and look at various things and find they're not so bad. Now, let's just take the mean between these two and realize that a person who doesn't exteriorize is a person who does not want an exteriorized viewpoint. He does not feel he can tolerate an exteriorized viewpoint. He may have many reasons for this, but one of the main reasons he will give, of course, is that somebody may steal his body and so forth. In other words, here you have a tremendously valuable viewpoint which he's liable to lose if he exteriorizes. But viewpoints then must be scarce. Viewpoints are obviously too valuable to be used, and this comes about by viewpoints becoming intolerable. Let's take somebody standing, watching his family being butchered by soldiers or something of the sort, Indians or other wild people, and he would go along afterwards so intolerant of this viewpoint that he would fixate on it. It's the fact that he refuses to tolerate the viewpoint which makes him fixate on it. Now, the reason for this lies in the various agree-disagree scales in the doctorate lectures. The fact that if you want anything in this universe, you can't have it. If you don't want it, you're going to get it. This is an inversion, and when this inversion comes about, an individual finds himself overwhelmed each time on whatever his own determinism is. If he starts to desire something, he will find out immediately that he can't have it. Actually, he himself will take steps to make sure that he can't have it. The point is that you have an inversion. When he wants something to flow in, it flows out. When he wants something to flow out, it flows in. Now, there's nothing more pathetic than watching a psychotic try to give up any material object. I've processed a psychotic just on this basis, trying to make them give me or give up or throw away one possession, such as an old Kleenex or almost anything. Just try to make them give it up. No, they just won't do it. Material object is there, they clutch it to them. And I swear that if you handed them an adder, wide-mouthed and fully fanged, they would clutch it to their bosom. Anything that comes in, they immediately seize, and that's that. Now, you as an auditor are trying to make somebody give up something. In essence, you give up a compulsive viewpoint. Well, every time you ask them to give up something, they're liable to hold it closer. Now, there are many processes. There are a great many processes. There's all the standard operating procedures, and oddly enough, in good hands, they all work. There's universe processing. There's advanced course procedure. There's creative processing. On and on and on and on. The tremendous amount of technique which can be applied with good sense to preclear. There's enormous numbers of straight wire. There's old-time straight wire, the most basic straight wire there is, which, by the way, is better than Freudian analysis. It's a marked advance on Freudian analysis, the first straight wire we ever had, which we noticed that the preclear is afraid of cats, so we say, all right, now let's recall a time when you were afraid of cats. Now let's recall somebody who was afraid of cats. Now let's find a time when somebody said you were like this person. That was to some degree. It's formula, just straight wire, and you sprung apart these valences very gently. However, it required a great deal of good sense on the part of an auditor. An auditor now and then would become a straight wire expert, and by just asking such searching questions and causing the individual to recall certain things, he would bring about a great deal of relief on the case. Why did the relief take place? The individual has been going along in the full belief that he could not tolerate a certain viewpoint, and the auditor has come along and demonstrated to him that the viewpoint was in the past and therefore is tolerable. There's, in essence, the fundamentals of such straight wire. You get key outs on this type of straight wire. Well, there's that process, which is get the individual in present time so he isn't looking at the past. That's a goal of a great many processes. Another one is wipe out the past so we won't have to look at it or experience it. We have in viewpoint straight wire a very, very new type of thinking in this. This is a new type of thinking. It's not to be confused with what we have been doing for the low these many years. There isn't any connection with it. You should think of this as something entirely different because it has an entirely different goal than any process you've ever done on Brinkler. It takes the benefit of exteriorization and reduces it to straight wire. We get an individual to race around the universe and look at things, observe things, experience things. That's a grand tour and that sort of drill, and reduces it right down to straight wire, which is done interiorized or exteriorized. One simply goes on the basis that the preclear is in the state he is in because he is not tolerating many viewpoints. And the entire goal of the process is to bring him to a point where he will tolerate viewpoints. That's all there is to the process. The key wording of the process is you wouldn't mind. All right, let's give an example of this. Why do I announce this as something important, something new, something that is very useful to you, and so forth? That's because, as I told you a few days ago in a lecture, there are many varieties of viewpoint. If we were to take knowingness and squash it, we would find we were first getting into space, which would be perception. We have to perceive to know. Now, if we condense that, we find out that we have to get emote to know. The person has to emote. We squash perception, and we get into emotion to know. Now, if we squash down and condense even further emotion, we get effort. And if we condense effort even further, we get thinkingness. And if we condense and package thinkingness, we get symbols. As an example of this, what is a word but a package of thought? And if we were to condense symbols, we would get actually the wider definition of the symbol. We would get animals. It's very strange when you think about it. You're probably thinking about it in terms of a viewpoint of a body, if you don't see that clearly. But the definition of a symbol is a mass with meaning, which is mobile. And that is a symbol. And, of course, that is an animal, too. An animal has certain form, which gives him certain meaning, and he is mobile. And if you see that thinkingness condenses then into form, you will understand art. Just in so many words, a very simple thing. You have thinkingness condensing into symbols. In other words, ideas are condensing into actually solid objects. And when these are mobile, we have these symbols. And when these symbols are observed, they are found to line themselves up with other symbols and take and associate with one another and take things from one another, and you get eating. Now that's a big band we're covering in there. That's the whole business from I have an idea about a form in this space and matter, and I'm going to get it all together, and I'm going to make this mass together. Well, the second we've done that, something has been created. Now, don't expect that thing which has been created to create anything, because it won't. So, it is a thing which isn't creating, and therefore must subsist on an interchange of energy. And we get eating. Now, we take eating and condense it down. That is to say, let's make food scarce, and let's make it very hard to get. And we got a condensation, you might say, which is completely escapes time itself. And you go outside of time and get sex. That is to say, that outside of present time, and you get future time, which is sex. An individual goes right straight off the time track between eating and sex. And there's nothing will float on a time track like a sexual engram. They just float all over the time track. They don't nail down at all. They're very mobile, believe me. And the individual, in eating, starts to slide out of present time by this token alone. And, you know, most people are terribly worried. How are they going to eat tomorrow? And when they reduce this down to the reductio ad gastronomy, you get to a point where I can't solve the problem of eating tomorrow, so therefore I'd better just leave it all up to somebody else and slide in on the genetic protoplasm line and go up the line a little bit and get a form and be another form. That's the best way to solve eating, is just to live tomorrow, and maybe tomorrow there will be more food. This is, by the way, such a thoroughly easy thing to perceive that a simple test will demonstrate this. Now let's take a look at those countries of the world which breed faster and harder than other countries of the world. And we find India and China, and we find that these two countries have the greatest food scarcity. Now we could say, well, look, they have the greatest food scarcity because they keep breeding people, and that eats up all their food. No, it's the other way too. They eat up all their food, and so they breed like mad. And this can be tested. This can be tested with an animal. If you starve an animal will procreate faster. If you were, for instance, to give any family of Homo sapiens a carbohydrate diet with a very, very low protein diet, by the way, this would be, you'd say, terribly unconducive to the production of, estrogen, androgen. It's true, it would be very unproductive to it, but if you give them a high carbohydrate, very low protein diet, the next thing you know, they'll start to get very anxious about breeding. You're telling them, in essence, right where they can understand it in their stomachs, that they are unable to obtain enough food today and so must eat tomorrow. Therefore, you get countries of the Western Hemisphere, which are very heavily starch dieted, and you find out that these countries are the most anxious about breeding and about tomorrow. The, no reason to stand around and prove this for hours. It's just a no-to-sex scale. You get condensed knowingness. I don't know how I'm going to get along today, so therefore I better breed like mad and appear tomorrow. Maybe I'll know then. It's about the last ditch. Well, if you notice this, death must come in this band above sex. A person presupposes his own death to indulge in the protoplasm line. See that? And so we get people like Schopenhauer and the will and the idea and so forth closely associating sex and death. And we get certain animals and insects and so on which so closely associate sex and death that they accomplish death when they accomplish sex. People always, particularly fear merchants, come along, they always like to tell you about the black widow spider. I don't know why the black widow spider is such an attractive beast to some people, but it's apparently so. I noticed that it exists mainly in California, Southern California. Lots of black widows down there. And most California girls, if you get into any kind of a discussion on the second dynamic at all, will sooner or later inform you that the female black widow spider eats its mate after consummation of the sexual act. I don't know why this is, but, probably Californians. Anyway, the main thing is here is actually when you go down this scale, although it doesn't belong on the scale, You find death just before sex. In other words, it goes no, look, emote, effort, think, symbol, eat, death, sex. See, only death doesn't belong there. But it just shows you where this mechanism comes in. Now, beingness might also be on this scale somewhere. Beingness might be on this scale. And if it were, you would have a tendency to look for it up toward the top. But the truth of the matter is, it's all up and down the scale. And there is no beingness like that beingness at symbols. You find most of the human race having been made into a form, that is, a mass which is mobile, has meaning, a mass with meaning which is mobile, that's a body, that's a word in a dictionary, that's a flag flying above a building, can be moved around and so forth. You find out that they indulge very, very heavily in being symbols. Well, you'll find people around being sexual objects, too. So that this scale sort of interlocks on beingness. A fellow could be some effort. And actually, we don't find beingness up the top of the scale at all. We find it down there pretty low on the scale. So when an individual's gotten to a point where he has to be something, he's practically out at the bottom. Now, that controverts some slight degree, something I said many, many weeks ago on this. But if you remember many weeks ago, I said beingness didn't belong on this scale. Beingness is an activity or a condition, and you might as well throw it onto the scale, so I just threw it onto the scale and didn't discuss it further. Further discussion, examination, would have to put beingness at least at symbols. A person becomes things at that level. So if you find a free clear, madly being his name, where is he? All right, now let's look this thing over even further and find out that there's, I told you the other day, some different kinds of viewpoints. There's something you might call a no point, K-N-O-W point. That would be senior to a viewpoint, wouldn't it? An individual wouldn't have any dependency on space or mass or anything else. He'd simply know where he was. Now, there'd be a viewpoint, which is a perception point, which would consist of look and smell and talk and hear and all sorts of things could be thrown in under this category of viewpoint, but ordinarily, we simply mean at that level of the scale, looking. But you can throw all the rest of the perceptions in at that level of the scale. Now, we go down a little bit, and we would get something called an emotion point. It would be that point from which a person emotes and at which he is emoted. And then there'd be something else called an effort point. And the effort point would be that area from which a person exerted effort and that area into which a person received effort. And we'd go down a little bit more than that, we'd find we had a thinking point. And there, of course, we could figure, the person is thinking there, not looking. And we go down a little bit further than this and we get into from a thinking point, we just get a symbol point. And there, really, properly, we get words. And below that, we get an eating point. And below that, we get a sex point. If you considered each one of these below no as an effort to make space, a great deal of human behavior would make sense to you. Let's take an individual trying to make space with words. He's simply trying to make space with words. Words don't make good space. And so an individual tries to make space with words, sooner or later gets in bad condition. Now, let's look at another one, much lower than that, and a person who's trying to make space with eating. Of course, that's inverted, isn't it? And then there's the person who is trying to make space with sex. And boy, that's really inverted. That goes both ways from the middle. Now, of course, part of the eating scale, the lowest part of the eating scale, is excretia. Urine people will try to make space with that. Dogs are always trying to make space, for instance, that way. Now, then there are people who try to make space with effort. This is the use of force. This is Genghis Khan riding out and slaughtering a bunch of people. He's trying to make space. You notice the space had to exist before he could ride out any place. And we go up a little higher, and maybe you've known somebody who tried to make space with emotion. And we go up a little higher and get the way you do make space, which is by looking. Actually, you can make space by knowing. If you just knew there was some space, there'd be some space. That'd be about all there was to that. So simple. Now, that's an effective way to go about it, and looking is another effective way to go about it. And when we get down to emotion, boy, that's getting real ineffective. People who try to make space with emotion don't get very far. That's literally, actually, figuratively, any other way you want to look at it, they just don't get very far. You can't make much space with emotion. It's too condensed, and it kicks back, and so forth. And then there's the individual who makes space by working hard, or by pushing hard, or by exerting force. In other words, there's quite a little bit of band there, you see, to the effort band. And you'll find out they don't get very far either. But they get less far than people who try to make space with emotion. And now we get into the thinking band, and people who try to make space with thinking. Boy, that is about the awfulest activity anybody could engage in, is trying to make space with thinking. And, of course, we get down to making space with symbols. This is a nation trying to fly its flag all over the world and so forth. And doesn't make much space. And then we, of course, go into eating, and an individual, by offering things to be eaten, such as a cattleman, you know, he offers things to be eaten, he's making space with cattle. And a fat man, of course, is trying to make space with food. So now, when we get down into sex, of course, if an individual could breed fast enough and far enough and that sort of thing, why, he'd wind up with all kinds of space, he thinks. Of course, he winds up with no space. This is the most condensed activity you can get into, sex. If you want to see somebody's bank all short-circuited and jammed, it's certainly short-circuited and jammed on sex. But remember, we're looking at a gradient scale that runs from sex right straight on up through to no. And anybody comes along and tells you sex is the only aberration there is, laugh at him. Say, yes, that was how we entered the problem. We found out that people were loopy on the subject of sex. So then we examined the problem, and having examined the problem for many, many years, discovered that sex was part of the gradient scale of human experience, which is an activity of trying to make space, and people try to make space in various ways. And when they get down too low, why, on the sexual scale, they're abandoning life when they get into sex. They're abandoning present time life and trying to get some future going on the track, and that throws them all around the place, because sex is really a cave-in. It's the effort to have an experience externally. You know, pull an experience in. Well, if you look at this band up and down, you'll see it inverts here or there. So, it gives you the doggonedest, most enormous number of straight wire questions when codified correctly you'd ever want to ask anybody. The basic questions would reduce this thing first from just the standpoint of viewpoint of the whole scale. And there's where you'll catch your pre-clear most ably. You just take viewpoint of the scale, viewpoint of sex, you see, and viewpoint of effort and so forth. And you would ask a question like this. You'd say, all right, let's give me some effort you wouldn't mind observing, type of effort you wouldn't mind observing, type of sex you wouldn't mind observing, sexual activity you wouldn't mind looking at, and so on and so on and so on and so on. You know, some eating you wouldn't mind watching, some emotion you wouldn't mind observing. Just as quiet and mild as that. Now, the systematic questions as you go into the line would run like this. Now, give me something you wouldn't mind knowing, something you wouldn't mind looking at, an emotion which you wouldn't mind observing, some effort which you wouldn't mind observing, thinking which you wouldn't mind observing, And now some symbols, which you wouldn't mind seeing. And some eating, which you wouldn't mind inspecting. And some sex you wouldn't mind looking at. Well, that's the simplest way to phrase these questions. But as we go on from there, of course, these questions can get much more complicated because we simply interweave every single part of Scientology and get the individual to pick out some kind of a viewpoint by gradient scale which he wouldn't mind observing or wouldn't mind experiencing. Now, as we go on a little further from this, we find out some efforts you wouldn't mind engaging in. Some efforts you wouldn't mind having leveled against you. Some thinking you wouldn't mind doing. Some things you wouldn't mind thinking about. Better question. Some things about you you wouldn't mind people thinking. And so forth. In other words, you throw him into the centers of those viewpoints. As what? First as cause and then as effect. Which is, of course, then obeying the entire communication chain. C to E being the definition of communication, cause, distance, effect. So, give me some people you wouldn't mind looking at you. And you'll finally get him down to give me some things now you wouldn't mind eating, and some things you wouldn't mind being eaten by. You see, cause to effect. Let's get the action involved in it. But how complicated would you have to be with a straight wire? Well, you wouldn't have to be very complicated. You can actually take the first lineup, which I gave you, and just play that over and over and over and over and over, and you'll clear up the fellow's bang and turn on his sonic visio. That's not an idle promise. I've been working with this process. And at first, when I was using the process, it was so complicated that I rather despaired of an auditor using it, since it took into consideration the many considerations of the frequent, and finally just broke it down to a point where it no longer took into consideration any of the considerations of the frequent, and so it became a simple enough process to put out, and a process which could be used to advantage. Now you go over and over and over this, and the whole object of it would be to bring the frequent into a higher tolerance of viewpoints. And of course, this will eventually fish him out into having some space. And you accomplish all the goals there are just by that highly permissive, quiet approach. Now, if you don't think this will turn on some somatics, you're quite mistaken. It turns on some very vicious, extremely vicious. If you don't think it won't turn on some aberrations, you're also mistaken. It's liable to turn on some very, very vicious ones, because your preclear will immediately determine that you are asking him these questions in order to beat him into apathy. And his first acceptance of any viewpoints will be an apathetic acceptance. He'll suddenly conceive that you're just asking him, all right, I'll give up and abandon all the fight every place, and all right, so I will look at my mother. All right, I don't mind looking at my mother. I don't mind looking at my mother punishing. You're pushing him right straight through the tone band. Now, an auditor using this process shouldn't kick the bottom out from the preclear. And if he tries to press the preclear too hard and push him around too hard, he'll really produce this apathetic reaction. You're inviting the preclear to look at things which he ordinarily would find intolerable. And you're just going in there a little deeper and a little further and a little further and a little further, and you're just inviting him to do this and to do that and to look at this and do that. And your goal is, without directing his attention toward any specific thing, that's the one thing you leave alone with this process. Don't direct his attention to anything specific. Let him pick up what he picks up, good, bad, or indifferent. Why? You will find him eventually looking a red-hot electronic or an atom bomb in the teeth and saying, yep, yeah, the viewpoint of my town being wiped out by an atom bomb. Yep. Yep. Yeah, that pretty bad, be radioactively burned that bad. Yeah, I guess I could experience that. You just search a little further occasionally and ask him, well, how would you like to experience such a thing? And he'll say, oh, no, no, no. Now, you'll find out that he will run into one which isn't on this scale, a viewpoint of aberration. People try to make space with aberration. And he will run into this sooner or later and tend to fixate on people who have made a lot of space with aberration. Particularly, this fellow's an auditor. He's liable to fixate on aberration and look constantly and continually for aberration rather than to realize that 99% of living consists of non-aberrated conduct. It's the fact that a culture gets stuck on the remaining 1% which invites a person to plumb only into that 1%. But if he does, he's overlooking the bulk of living. Just because you were part of a culture which had a taboo against touching banyan trees would be no reason for you then to exclusively process the touching of banyan trees. You see that? You went into the mugwumps in Lower Catatonia. You wouldn't find very many customs which made good sense to you. So you would consider all these customs as aberrated customs, and you would be very likely prone to process out these strange, weird, and fantastic customs. And these would demand your interest to such a degree that you would overlook the fact that even the mugwumps are doing a lot of things which are a lot of fun and which they enjoy doing and so forth. In other words, if an auditor looks at aberration only as a part of conduct, he is not really clearing up the life of the individual at all. You want to get his attention off of aberration rather than get on it. But people make space with aberration. And an auditor tends to fixate on such people because those people evidently can make space and certainly have made space in the past when there was no remedy for their aberration. They said, boy, is it safe to be aberrated? There's no cure for it. Now, you've done a terrible thing. You come along and told the fellow that he isn't safe being aberrated anymore. You're going to cure him. Of course, his primary impulse, if he really realized what he was doing, would be to knock you off. You're spoiling his game entirely. All right, as we go over this straight wire, we find out that many other items could be added into it. An auditor could use the ARC triangle. Who could you like? What wouldn't you mind agreeing with? What could you agree with right here? What could disagree with you? Just that. And you would get the reality and the affinity sides of the communication triangle. Now, you could get fancier than that. You could get up to a point of, who wouldn't you mind hating you? Who wouldn't you mind hating? With hate and so forth is usually a non-acceptable viewpoint. But as soon as you start going out terribly wide with this and including all the other elements that you can think of and so on, it gives you quite a repertoire, but you had better not get too complicated because it'll stop producing results for you out there in about the third or fourth echelon. So you stick along with the ARC triangle, the notice-sex scale, and primary principles such as duplication. Well, wouldn't you mind duplicating? Let's look around and find something you wouldn't mind duplicating at the moment. Stick close to home, in other words, with such things as the dynamics. Now, let's take this whole thing and run it against the dynamics. We discover that we have in any one of the no-to-sex scale, we have 8 dynamics at every level. We have the effort of sex and the effort of God at the effort band. You see, the complexities of life are made up from the fact that you have 8 dynamics at each level of the no-to-sex scale. See, there's knowing about sex. There's knowing about spirits. There's knowing about... This is all in the knowingness band. It doesn't necessarily know about these things. It doesn't take you into that, into the dip on further condensation. You simply know about these things, that's all. perfectly at liberty to know about anything you want to know about. There isn't anything damaging about knowing. And then we go into look, and of course you can look at anything on the eight dynamics. So you've got eight dynamics there. Look. But remember that look includes lots of perceptions, other perceptions, even though sound dives down to symbols. The sound, hearing, a transfer, communication of symbols goes way on down the bottom, the band there. Nevertheless, actually belongs in the field of perception, which is at look. See, hear. Look, hear, these things go together. The hardest thing there is to turn on in a case, lookingness turns on long before sonic. And sonic is the hardest thing there is to turn on in a case, because an individual will turn it off. So we mustn't neglect in this straight wire process such things as sound. All right, what wouldn't you mind listening to? What sound wouldn't you mind making? What sound would it be all right for you to make? So forth. What sound would it be all right for you to hear right now? And you pursue that course of questioning for a while, and you will find an individual's ears will hurt and pop and snap, and various things will occur, and sonic liable to turn on. But of course, if you haven't hit the rest of the band, his sonic won't turn on. You see, you've got a lot of things there he's afraid of looking at and afraid of hearing. He's also afraid of other people hearing things. What would it be all right for other people to hear? So we could spread this all out onto a bracket, couldn't we? We, in other words, play this thing almost anyway. There's almost an infinity of questions. We get emotion. Of course, there's an emotional level from the first to the eighth dynamic. And quite in addition to that, there are about eight very, very specific emotions. So we've got eight dynamics for each emotional scale. Look how this plots out for straight wire questions. We've got effort for all eight dynamics, and we've got all kinds and types of effort. We have the force, ideas of force. We have electronic, we have mechanical effort. You know, there's lots of them. And the same way about thinking. There's all kinds of thinking. There's mathematical thinking, there's intuitive thinking, and there's spontaneous thinking and telepathic thinking, and you could get very complicated if you want to. Well, the funny part of it is that's what your preclear's brain's going to do the second you start asking him simple questions. See, he'll start racking around all over the place. And what you're looking at here is if you plot these eight dynamics at every level on the no to sex scale, and then plot the eight dynamics on each corner of the ARC triangle. And if you were actually to arrange the no to sex scale as a triangular column, you know, no to sex at each corner of the column, and that triangle, bottom or top, were the ARC triangle. You see there, did you get that picture? Let's take ARC at the bottom, pretty condensed, and we take it and apply it to sex. See? And then we have agreement and disagreement about sex. And then we have, over on another corner, why we have liking and other emotional reactions toward sex. And then we have, at the other corner, sexual communication. So that at each point there, we could take the no-to-sex scale totally in communication. No-to-sex scale totally, as it comes down the line, in terms of affinity. And the no-to-sex scale totally in the form of reality, which is agreement. And we would have the nicest looking column there you ever wanted to see. It's the ARC triangle gone solid on us, and we plot it in chunks on the no-to-sex scale vertically. See, we just got a stack of triangles, a vertical stack of triangles. They're all lying there flat. You see that? Well, by the time we've pushed this around and drawn it around a few times and worked it around, we find out that, my golly, we're working with a jigsaw puzzle now, which can be plotted almost in any direction that comes up with practically the same answers. And it interweaves and interlocks, and these interweaves and interlocks and interrelationships are the basics of the complications known as life and human behavior and animal behavior and any other kind of behavior. I'll write a book sometime on behavior along all of the eight dynamics. It gets very interesting. When you get to the eighth dynamic, you have God behavior. Then you have to, of course, take into account all kinds of things, such as what is the acceptance level of God and so forth. It gets very amusing after a while when you start plotting out behavior, but you could get awfully complicated in this line. You could sit down and you could write 10, 15 million word books without any trouble whatsoever, tracing out numerous examples and so forth. Well, it's so easy to get complicated. Then why don't you leave that up to your preclair? And why don't you stay with these great simplicities, such as the corners of the triangle, and the note of sex scale, and you find out he's studiously avoiding the third dynamic, why you take note of it sooner or later and ask him, what's something about groups he could agree with or he wouldn't mind experiencing? What kind of a group would he mind experiencing? Something like that. Just steer him a little bit, because he can get complicated enough, and your whole goal is a very simple goal. That's to give this individual some tolerance of viewpoints. Try to make him tolerate viewpoints wider and wider, more and more of them, and he will start changing his mind. And that is the first thing that processing ought to do, is change a preclear's mind. Process doesn't change preclear's mind, isn't any good at all. And that's one thing this process does with rapidity. You say, now, let's some kind of effort you wouldn't mind looking at. Oh, effort. Effort. Effort? What do you mean by effort? Just effort. Somebody putting out some energy and so on. Let's see. With this kind of a reaction, you're liable to get a long communication line. Now, all of a sudden, the individual happily thinks, a dancer. I wouldn't mind watching a dancer. That's right, I wouldn't mind watching a dancer. Yeah, he's real certain now. He just wouldn't mind that at all. He has suddenly realized that effort was part of art. You've made him change his mind about effort to that degree that now he recognizes that effort is an essential part of existence, not something you would ignore all the time. The next thing you know is he will say, he wouldn't mind his mother doing housework. Wouldn't mind watching his mother doing housework. Think about all the complaining that he listened to when he was a little kid. He all of a sudden reevaluates this whole thing. It served him right. Yeah. Anybody that unhappy about something or other ought to close terminals with it. And then he realizes that he himself has kept areas, even if they were only a summer camp and so forth, certainly clean and burnished bright, and maybe a compartment on a ship when he was in the service or something like that. He's kept that all duded up, and he's worked hard at this sort of thing, and he begins to wonder a little bit just what the devil his mother was talking about. It was a small house. There was only a couple of kids. There wasn't too much work to do, and all he ever heard about was how hard she worked, and now he's scratching his head wondering how this could come about. Well, he's liable to hit one of these tracks of association and want to soliloquize for the next 8 hours. You're not interested in consideration. You're interested in looking at. And that's all you're interested in. You're interested in looking at. You want him to tolerate viewpoints. You don't give a damn for his opinion about a viewpoint, because every time he starts to give you a bunch of considerations and stretch it all out and explain to you this and explain to you that, without suddenly damming his communication line, but by expertly detouring him, getting look at something else, because there's... You don't want him in the think band. You just landed him in the thinkingness band. Instead of looking, now he's perfectly willing to think. And do you know that he could probably go on thinking for the next 76 trillion years without getting any place with it? That's a solemn and horrible fact. That thinkingness doesn't happen to wind up in solutions. Thinkingness is based upon the fact that a person doesn't know, so he has to think about it. The solution depends upon the fact of his postulating that he does know, and then he knows. You see, in order to do thinking, you have to assume that you have to go through some kind of a process in order to arrive at an answer. Now, there's another horrible thing that happens about pre-clears, is you see, they have to have assumed an inability, assumed that they had an inability before they have it. Now, look how this blocks processing. They have to assume that they can't do so-and-so in order to have it remedied. And you leave them parked there. I've gone into this several times. We didn't have a process which easily remedied it. But an individual has to assume he's sick before he can make up his mind to get well. The reason he's sick, basically, is in the postulate man. He's had to make a postulate that he's sick before he can make up his mind to get well. Now, if your pre-clear has had to make up his mind that he's aberrated before he can get sane, he's still writing on the postulate that he's aberrated. But he's still better off having made the postulate that he's aberrated so that he can get over his aberrations than to coast along gibbering like an idiot for years and years telling everybody how sane he is. You see, he'd be crossed up there in universe or something. Well, what does this do, this process, do for universes? We have the three kinds of universes, the other fellow's universe, the pre-clear's universe, and the physical universe. And what does it do for these universes? Well, any universe is essentially existent in the space created by lookingness. See, any universe exists from the center of lookingness. So if we speak of Mama's universe, it's the point from which Mama is looking. See, if we think of Mama's universe. Now, we could take a terrific number of factors here that would complicate this universe, such as what does Mama say, what are her postulates, and so forth, and we get the space with the postulates. You see that? First, she has to have some space, one way or the other, and then she has to put some postulates in there to have a universe. The basic definition of a complete universe would be some space which is tenanted by postulates. Postulates, of course, might wind up in forms of various kinds, might wind up in various conditions. Now you can ask yourself someday, why is it you see this meshed universe so well? And if you look around, you will discover that there are many people around who are so thoroughly interiorized into Mama's universe or somebody else's universe that they actually see Mama's engrams. Now, you don't have to go very far to investigate this. You take a pre-clear who is very badly interiorized into some other person's universe than his own, they will see that other person's pictures and not their own. Now, get that. The fact that Mama made a postulate produced a visibility. Mama said, there are snakes, and this individual then very easily gets pictures of snakes. But he himself can say, in trying to put up mock-ups, there are flagpoles, and he doesn't get a mock-up of a flagpole. Curious, huh? If Mama had said there are flagpoles, he would be able to see flagpoles. See that? He must be running on somebody else's postulates than his own. So the manifestation of super, super, super visibility, which is not the individual's super, super, super visibility, you know, the individual doesn't, when he puts up a mock-up, he doesn't get this much visibility on it. Yeah, he has terrific visibility on mock-up somebody else has put up, you know, like Mama's statements and so forth. You're looking at a condition there of living in somebody else's created space. Now, what would you think of somebody who could look out here and see a factory chimney with great ease and yet couldn't mock one up of his own? You would suspect him of being in another universe, wouldn't you? Well, whose universe is he in? He's in the physical universe. That's the universe he's in. Its postulates are so strong and impressed upon him so strongly that its reality is much greater than his own reality. Therefore, we used to talk about, and in the book 8008, talk about agreement with the physical universe. You can agree with it or disagree with it, but as long as its postulates outweigh your own postulates, you're going to have difficulty. Now, there's a lot of complexity here that we needn't even look at. And that complexity, however, that we do need to look at, or part of it we do need to look at, is this. Look, an individual is in the physical universe, and then he's re-interiorized, you might say, into somebody else's universe, such as Mama's. And Mama's pictures are very bright to him, but his own mock-ups don't exist. Oh, boy. Now, the common denominator of universes declares for him that the physical universe is right there, you know? There is the physical universe. There it is. But he is not even in it. He has been in it, and has, to some degree, he was in his own universe, and then he got into the physical universe, and now he went into his last wife's universe and his mother's universe, and he's in those universes. Well, man, there's no telling what kind of a mock-up this individual's liable to get if he gets any at all. Everything is kind of other determined. If he gets any pictures, they're probably in a nightmare. He's running on somebody's declared statement that he resists all the time, and he goes to sleep and his resistance cuts down. The next thing you know, he's in a full-arm play about something or other. When your individual is departed from the physical universe into Mama's universe and so forth on down the line, you've got this kind of a backtrack to walk with your preclear. He's got to get out of his Mama's universe and into the physical universe. Now, the only way he ever gets into a universe is by refusing to tolerate its viewpoints. If he refuses to look, he pins himself in the universe with his own energy and turns off the visio. There's two necessary steps here. He interiorizes by resisting. He goes into the universe by resisting the universe. A viewpoint he doesn't want is the one he gets. You see that? Because he's the only person really capable of putting out energy. So he is granted another determinism, and having granted this other determinism, it backfires on him. Now, let's look at this physical universe out here and discover that an individual has as much perception in it and of it as he will tolerate its viewpoints. And you're not going to get anybody out of Mama's universe, really, or out of the physical universe until they can tolerate a viewpoint or an effort point or a sex point of any part of the whole darn universe. And when they will tolerate any point in it, any view, any effort, either as cause or as effect, they are then capable of withdrawing from that universe. Until they can tolerate all the various viewpoints of that universe, they can't withdraw from it. So your preclear is going to think at first that you're just pushing him into apathy because you're asking him to tolerate things, and he knows that if he tolerates those viewpoints, it'll finish him. And that's the funny part of it. It is only by refusing to tolerate it that he gets finished. So the course and direction of this processing is to bring about greatest possible tolerance, the greatest possible number of viewpoints. Okay.